everyone, and welcome to 99% Effective. I hope everyone's doing well. Hi, George.
Hey, Tisha, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm happy to see that it's getting warmer out. The days are lasting longer. Yes. My grass is growing, which means I'm going to have to go out there and cut soon. But
I was going to say, I'm, I have to start cutting.
I do, but I'm still happy for the warm weather and the longer days for sure.
So are you like my husband where you talk about cutting the grass all the time?
I try not to. It's to really pump myself up to say, okay, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to do it. And now I don't have the excuse of it being, you know, dark at 5:30. So it's like, if I say it, then I really have to do it. Because those rainy days really add up quickly.
Yes, they do. And they make the grass grow that much longer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're in May and the weather's been great and we're excited that, I'm sure a lot of people are excited. The school year's coming to an end and getting ready for summer. But it's also a good segue into who is joining us today. And do you want to introduce her, George?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I think as we talk about seasons and the change, you know, I think this is one of those times of year where if you are in the school system, you know, you may be thinking about your upcoming PPT meeting. And, you know, so today our guest, Vicky DeVoe, will give us a little bit of information about kind of what the PPT is, what that process looks like, and then what is the parent and caregiver's roles. So I'd like to welcome Vicky DeVoe, who wears many hats as she is a licensed clinical social worker. She is a part-time instructor for the University of Kentucky, an outpatient therapist, and if she didn't have enough on her plate, she's also a doctoral candidate. So Vicky, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So let's jump right in here, Vicky. So, you know, we're talking about kind of PPTs and kind of getting into that process. So can you talk to us about what a PPT is and what might qualify a student for such a meeting?
Sure. So a PPT is a planning and placement team meeting. There are a lot of acronyms in special education, and so I will do my very best to define them as we go.
Awesome. I have a quick question, Vicky. Mm-hmm. Is it PPT in every state, or does every state call it something a little different?
That's a good question. I'm only familiar with Connecticut law, so okay. I'm not sure what they call it in other states. So a PPT is a formal meeting. It's a means of documentation. There are a variety of reasons that a PPT might be held. For students who are not identified under special education, a PPT would be called because the school's concerned or a parent has expressed a concern that there's a suspicion of a disability. Other reasons that one might hold a PPT is around attendance concerns. In the case of seclusion and restraint, if there have been 4 seclusions or restraints in 20 days in the school, they are required to hold a PPT. For students who are already identified under special education, there might also be a PPT because of the requirement of holding a meeting annually or triennially to review the plan, or a transition meeting because a kiddo is going to age out. And also, there might just be a PPT because a parent has requested it, or a student over the age of 18 might have requested it. So there are a variety of reasons that a student might have such a meeting.
So, you know, as you were describing kind of the function of the PPT and what may qualify a student for it, it does sound like there are a myriad of reasons why there may be a meeting called. And I think one of the things that we hear from parents is that, oh, I'm going to have a PPT meeting for my child. And that may mean different things for different children. Again, as you've noted, maybe they're aging out, or maybe it's part of an existing plan. What if a parent doesn't understand the function of a PPT? And they know that they want to have something for their child, but maybe they haven't been identified with a disability. Can you talk to us about kind of how a parent would go about requesting a meeting, maybe it not being a formal PPT?
So, you know, hopefully the parent has some point people in the school. And sometimes it's the classroom teacher because that's the person with whom they have the most contact. And that's a good place to start. So they might mention to the classroom teacher, I think we need to have a meeting. I have a concern. And then the classroom teacher will say, I'll have our principal call you, or I'll have our social worker reach out to you. So they should know who those point people are. Certainly a parent could go directly to the top and let a principal or an assistant assistant principal know that they had a concern, or if their child has a provider in the building, maybe the kiddo's receiving counseling services from the school social worker, they can go straight to that person as well. And that concern will be funneled wherever it needs to go.
So can you talk to us a little bit about kind of what your role was within the PPT meeting?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I have worn a lot of hats in my day. And in terms of my role in the school, it was clinician, it was supporting our behavioral program, it was social skills instruction, it was parent resource. So specific to PPTs, if we were conducting an initial evaluation for special education, one of the evaluations that would be requested is a social and developmental history. And so that's an interview between the school social worker and the parent or caregiver to gather biopsychosocial information about the kiddo. That information is then shared out at the PPT team, relevant portions of it, of course. And so my role was to write and to report on that social developmental history, which was unique, I think, because I spent more time with the parent prior to the determination meeting than probably any other team member, which afforded me kind of a special relationship, like to at least be a familiar and friendly face at that meeting, because it can be super overwhelming to come to the table and see so many professionals involved in your child's care. So that was certainly one of my roles. All of the PPT team members are involved in eligibility decisions, so we all had input in that. Parents as well as a vital team member have input in that. I was the counselor for a lot of students, and so my role at the PPT was also to talk about counseling progress, make recommendations. At times, I was also an administrative designee at that PPT. I imagine we'll talk about who's on the PPT team. And one of the requirements is that you have an administrator there. And if the administrator is unable to attend that meeting, they have to appoint a designee. And so my role was often to be the designee because I was someone that was familiar with both curriculum and services within district. Finally, for me, I was also the 504 coordinator for our building. And so being at those PPT meetings, even though those are two completely separate processes, was useful because oftentimes there are questions around what is a 504 plan, what is an individualized education plan, and how are they different? And so I was able to kind of speak to some of those questions in my role in the PPT.
And can you talk to us and our listeners about kind of what is the difference between the 504 and the IEP and kind of what is an IEP?
Sure. So maybe we could start with what is an IEP and go from there. So an IEP is an individualized education plan. It's a legal document. Any student who qualifies for special education and related services has an IEP. That IEP follows them to other districts. It follows them out of state. It's very important that they have that. The IEP has a lot of information. It's got places for parent and student input. It contains their present level. So how are they performing currently, academically, socially, behaviorally? On that IEP, there are goals and objectives that are written to support any area that's listed as an area of concern in those present levels. Those goals and objectives contain information about how they will be assessed, how they will be monitored. There will be progress marks on that IEP related to those goals and objectives, just like you would find on a report card. Also on that IEP, it will indicate what special education and related services a student might need. There's something on an IEP called the grid that folks might hear that referred to. That grid's really important because it contains information about hours, location, implementer frequency, and duration of services. So for example, a student might get 5 hours of special education support a week. And so that grid will spell out exactly what they're supposed to be receiving and who's supposed to be giving it. On that IEP, there's also information around whether a kiddo qualifies for extended school year or accommodations on standardized testing, and accommodations and modifications will be found on that IEP. So in terms of the differences between accommodations and modifications, that's kind of where we come to the difference between an IEP and a 504 plan. So an IEP falls under the Individuals with Disabilities Act, it's special education law. The 504 plan falls under the Rehabilitation Act of 1973. It falls under the ADA, it's civil rights law. So those are two very different things from the get-go. The IEP governs how state and public agencies provide early education or early intervention, special ed related services. It's a legal document that's reviewed at least annually with those measurable goals and objectives that we talked about versus the 504 plan, which is still a legal document. It protects students with a disability or those that are regarded as having a disability. In order to qualify for that, they have to be substantially limited by that disability in a major life activity, seeing, hearing, breathing, working, talking, performing manual tasks. There's a whole laundry list of life activities that can be impacted by a 504. Best practice is to review a 504 annually, but it's not legally required in the way that it is for an IEP. In a 504 plan, a student is entitled to accommodations only. Accommodations change the how of what is being taught, but it does not change the content of what is taught. It does not change the criteria for meeting particular benchmarks. Modifications, which they are entitled to under the IEP, those change the what. They change content, they change benchmarks, they change expectations. And so within IEP, a student is entitled to both modifications and accommodations versus with a 504, it's accommodations only. I have heard the 504 on occasion being referred to as like the consolation prize when a kiddo doesn't qualify for an IEP, but I want to dispel that myth that the 504 is a very strong plan and many students are well supported by a 504 plan. If it's well written and if the adults are following it the way that it's written, kiddos can be very well supported by it. And of course, if folks are not following that plan, it is a legal document and there's recourse for that.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, that's a very important distinction, because I think as parents kind of begin their journey down the path of needing to receive, you know, some type of specialized education, or as you've noted, an accommodation or a modification to how their particular student or child learns, it's important to know some of those clarifying points and kind of what you're bringing to the table going in, and with something being recommended, understanding, okay, this is what we need, or this is what we need. You spoke earlier about kind of what the process of the PPT looks like and, you know, the number of members that could potentially be in this meeting. And I think we've heard in the past that this team meeting could be 20 people, this meeting could be 4 people. So is there kind of an ideal number, or is it just there are certain people that have to be at the table and that's kind of dictating how many people are involved?
So again, you're talking about a legal process. And so there are certain individuals that absolutely have to be at that table. So the parent or guardian is always invited to that meeting, and the school district will do their very best efforts to make sure that that parent or guardian is at the table, even if they participate by phone. It's so important to have that input. The child, if they're older, is invited to that meeting. They don't absolutely have to go. They don't always like to go, but it's really good for them to be at least at a portion of their PPT meeting. Same holds true with 504 meetings. You want the kiddo there when they're older, if that's at all possible. As I mentioned before, at a PPT, also an administrator or a designee must be there. And districts kind of identify those folks differently. Some districts, it might be the principal or the assistant principal. It might be somebody from pupil services, or it might be, like I said, somebody designated by the admin to be there. A general education teacher has to be at that meeting. So for a kiddo who's in high school that might have 8 different teachers, they pick one teacher to come. And then typically what they do is they collect information from like all the gen ed teachers, and then they share out that information for everyone at the meeting. Because again, you would have so many people around that table if you were to invite everyone. a special education teacher has to be at a PPT meeting. The only exception to that is if a kiddo is speech only, because then there are no academic goals and you don't need a special education teacher there to speak to that. You just need the speech language pathologist there. There's always a pupil services personnel member, so that could be a school psychologist, a school social worker, a school counselor. If the discussion is around conducting evaluations, anyone who might be conducting an evaluation, that's an important person to have at the table if at all possible, because then they're getting firsthand information from parent and classroom teacher instead of kind of playing catch up afterward. Any direct service providers for that kiddo should be at that meeting. So that could be an occupational therapist, physical therapist, the speech language pathologist, the counselor. Sometimes if a kiddo has a one-to-one adult support, you might find a paraeducator at that meeting, but that's not a have to. Kind of depends on what's being discussed at the time. Consultants might be at that meeting as well. So there might be a board certified behavior analyst involved with a student. And so it's good to have that BCBA at the table. Certainly, if a kiddo had an educational surrogate or a guardian ad litem or a DCF worker, those might be folks you would find at that table. And for older students with parent consent, you might find a representative of DDS or DNIS or BSBY or BRS or, you know, folks like that at the table as well.
Sure.
I know it can be overwhelming when you have so many people sitting there, but you have so many people invested in the success of your student. And so I think that's just such an important reframe for that, that there are a lot of folks that there that care and are invested and, you know, want to make a good plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we hear sometimes that parents, you know, or caregivers may also invite people to the PPT that they feel are important there. And, you know, so that may be a family member who has, you know, lots of time spent with the student because, hey, you know, they spend the afternoons with them and this is what they're seeing during the afternoon versus what we're seeing in the morning. But I think it's important for families, you know, whether it's the parent, the caregiver, the guardian, to really think about who are the people that are most important in this particular individual's life so that they can participate in this meeting, or, hey, they're going to submit something written so that it can be on record just saying, here's what we're seeing, here are the things that we're noting, here's the progress that they're making in a particular area as well, because I think that may, sometimes we don't always focus on the positives of what comes out of these meetings and really thinking about, hey, we're making lots of progress, and yes, that progress may not be as fast as we want, but we're certainly seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and absolutely. And just to your point, if there are outside service providers, if the kiddo is receiving counseling in the community or, you know, occupational therapy in the private setting, those are folks that are helpful to tap into either to attend the meeting or to, like you said, jot something down to bring to the meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think
I'm sorry, George. I just thought of something about the parents and the actual PPT meeting. What is the rule around recording the PPT meeting? Because it's so overwhelming for all that information, and you walk away saying, "What did they say?" Because it's so much information.
Absolutely, and folks are allowed to record. You need to tell the district that you will be recording, ideally ahead of time, because okay, if you are recording, the district also needs to record. And so sometimes there's that last minute scramble to find a cell phone or a clunky tape recorder or something to bring to the table.
And then if the parents or caregivers do invite someone to the PPT with them, do they have to notify the school ahead of time that they're bringing someone with them?
It's helpful to notify the school ahead of time. That individual will not go on the formal invitation as they're like an invite of the parent. I mean, even just for space considerations, it's really helpful to know when there are going to be other folks at the table.
What if they are inviting an advocate or an attorney with them?
Again, it's helpful to notify the school ahead of time.
Okay.
That's likely not going to change who's at the table in terms of the school, but just in terms of open communication between school and parent, I think that's best practice.
So it's best practice. So I think my question more is to the attorneys, because I have had parents say that as soon as they said, we're bringing an attorney, then the district had their attorney there.
Yes. And so if a parent did not notify the district and showed up with an attorney, the school certainly has the right to press the pause button until they have all their appropriate members at the table.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about kind of parents and kind of their coming into this situation, maybe not knowing, I think we've heard the term PPT season. Is there a particular time of the year that this happens, or you know, what does that timeline really look like?
So some districts write their IEPs for the duration of a school year. And so then there is a crunch at the end of the school year, preparing for the upcoming school year. But at the end of the day, PPTs happen whenever they need to happen. And so sometimes it gets really busy just because that's what kids need. I mean, I guess for districts that do their IEPs annually, like I described, there's more of a season, but otherwise I would say no.
Talking about the PPT and preparing for it, and you said it is required that they're done annually. Can a parent call a PPT any time of the year, even though they already have an annual one coming up?
Absolutely. A parent can call a PPT anytime they want. But again, I feel like open communication is really the best case scenario if it's at all possible. And I'm not fooling myself into thinking that sometimes communication doesn't break down. Sometimes the concern can be really easily addressed without bringing 10 people to the table.
So
But
that's what would they
yes.
call a team meeting instead of a PPT?
So, I mean, districts refer to a lot of different kinds of meetings as a team meeting, but like at the end of the day, the PPT meeting is the formal legal meeting. And so, you know, they might call a team meeting something that just involves more of a like a conference talking about a kiddo's progress with a couple of folks who are working with that kid. Again, that communication is just so helpful so that schools know what kind of meeting do we need to hold and who needs to be there so that we can address a parent concern.
And should parents request their PPT in writing, or can they do it by phone? Well, I mean, I've always said to put everything in writing.
I mean, writing is good, right? You're documenting a concern and when you had that concern, but also, you know, if you're, I guess it kind of depends district to district and your relationship with the school. If you're really trying to cover yourself, then yes, everything in writing and at minimum an email to document that you
Exactly.
expressed it.
Now, if a parent requests a PPT, what is the time frame that the school has to accommodate the request?
If it is a request for an initial PPT, the kiddo is not in special education, I have a concern, I'm referring my child for special education, the timeline, so to speak, starts ticking at the date of the referral. And so the way you kind of break it down is from that date of referral, the district has 45 days to hold an initial PPT, evaluate, come back, review evaluations, make a decision, and implement an IEP. It has to be implemented by that 45th day. So that's really like the hard and fast timeline. So it behooves the school to hold that initial PPT kind of quickly so that they have as much time as they can on the other end
Gotcha.
to do an appropriate evaluation. The parent needs to have 5 days written notice of a
Okay.
PPT, but also the parent can waive that 5-day written notice if they're willing to in the interest of expediency, if
Gotcha.
that makes
Okay.
sense.
And then what should a parent do, parent caregiver do to prepare for a PPT meeting?
Talk to their kiddo and get input. I mean, even the littles have an opinion about how things are going at school. Certainly, talk to outside providers if they have a therapist or an occupational therapist or anybody like that. Talk to your kiddo's pediatrician. Let them know that a PPT is going to be happening. And also going through your documentation. So, you might want to put together some report cards, or if your kiddo's already in special education, pull up those old IEPs, or maybe they have a 504 plan and you want to have that at the table. If your child has had any outside evaluations, those are important things to let the school know of. There certainly has been the case where a therapist family has had like a comprehensive neuropsychological evaluation and didn't let the district know about the recommendations of that evaluation. So those kinds of things are really important to have. Also, preparing for a PPT, it helps to write down your thoughts, your concerns, your observations, absolutely, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're going to get at that table, there are going to be so many people there, you are going to forget what you wanted to say.
Absolutely.
So getting your ducks in a row ahead of time is helpful.
I agree.
And if you have point people at school, talk to them, find mm-hmm. out, what am I going to walk into? What's this going to look like? What can I expect? Again, there are 8 million acronyms in special education, so ask questions.
And I think a message I want to get to parents and caregivers is, I know, and from my own experience, you talk to other parents who've been in this situation, but, and that's great. You can get great support. They'll give you some advice, but you have to remember their experience is not going to be your experience.
Absolutely.
And they may have had several negative experiences, and you can't let that, you can't go in there thinking it's going to be a negative experience. That is their experience. Your experience is going to be very different. But I agree with you 100% about preparing. I used to go into my meetings like it was a business meeting. Mm-hmm. I used to have my notes, my pros and my cons. This is what I'm seeing. What are you seeing? And I think the other thing I want to circle back to when you talked about the IEP is there is the parent and student input section. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was not aware of that. So they were like, okay, do you want to have anything put into this? And I was like, well, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't know. So as I learned, I would type up, you know, it wasn't lengthy, maybe 4 or 5 sentences, maybe a little bit longer, a little shorter, depending on the year, what my parent input was. So then it was legally put into the document.
Right, absolutely.
And the other thing, you know, when my son was younger, obviously we didn't have him come. I think in 5th grade, I had him come when he was transitioning into the middle school. He came for like the last 5 minutes just to kind of say hi. And I wanted him to start seeing the process early on so he could learn to advocate for himself. But when he was younger, you know, we're talking preschool and kindergarten, 1st grade, I would bring a picture of him and kind of put it in the middle of the table just to remind everyone, this is who we're talking about. You know, he's not just a piece of paper. He's not just goals and objectives. This is who we're talking about. And it did make a difference having that visual there. This is going to be a doozy, I think, for you. Maybe not. But I know the IEP has recently changed in the state of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can't go into great detail, but are there like 1 or 2 big changes that you could maybe go over with us?
Yeah, so I mean, there will definitely be some formatting differences between the old and the new IEP. What I'm hearing from my colleagues is that it will be better connected to the Common Core standards. There's also going to be a parent portal where parents will be able to access the documents, as well as like a language translation feature. It's supposed to be more user-friendly. And the formatting is supposed to be such that the IEPs can be better individualized.
We are going to include in the show notes, I have the link to the new forms and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest to parents, if there's workshops out there that you see, I know there's a lot of family organizations that do it, CPAC, Favor, that they will offer free workshops. And most of them will be online, so you don't have to go in person, just to kind of go over the new form so people are aware of it, because I think that's also very important, is to know how to read that IEP.
Mm-hmm. There is, it's supposed to be rolled out officially for the next school year. There are a few districts that are piloting it right now. And I think overall it's like a 5-year rollout plan. And so there will be other changes coming down the pike, including, I believe, what 504 plans will look like.
I didn't know it was going to, a 504 plan was going to change as well. And I know I'm throwing a few questions in here mm-hmm. that are different, but as we talk, so many ideas come up. The 504, is that also a PPT meeting, or is that called something different?
It's a 504 meeting. And
okay,
so
that's what it's called. Okay.
There are fewer requirements as mm-hmm. to who needs to be at the table for a 504
gotcha.
Meeting.
Okay. And then the last question I have is also kind of a big one, I think, is what happens when a parent finds out the IEP is not being followed.
So, you know, again, I would hope that they would have point people that they can talk to at school. They can certainly go to the pupil services office. Districts call them different things, but whoever is special education, supervision, pupil services folks, there are ways to file formal complaints. And I did, there will be a link, I believe, I offered that will help parents to find like where that they can file that. And again, like you said, putting things in writing is so important. Mm-hmm. So they can go to the school, they can go to pupil services, and they can take it up the chain from there if they need to.
One of the best pieces of advice I ever received and then I've passed on is, you know, if all of a sudden you're at, you're picking your child up, or maybe one of your other kids, you're dropping something off and you run into one of the team members for your child in the hall and they're like, oh, this is happening. Or, you know, I noticed this. And it's just like one of those quick impromptu meetings. I would go back home. I would appreciate that time, but I would go back home and email them immediately. So it was in writing. Hey, thanks. You know, it was great seeing you in the hall today. And I just wanted to summarize some of the quick things that you told me about that my son or my child is some of the concerns you're having. Because I've heard people say even when they would go in for parent-teacher conferences, all of a sudden it would turn into a little bit more of a detailed meeting. And we would say, go back and document that. Document everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, there's such a benefit to having face-to-face interaction with parents because it's so busy and service providers don't always get that. But that's a nice way just to make sure that the parent understood what they heard and that everybody's on the same page.
So I have one last question.
Sure.
So speaking of time, because I know everyone's time is so valuable, including yours, and I wanted to thank you for being here and answering all these valuable questions. I know there's only allotted time that they schedule a PPT. What if the PPT is not done? What if that 1 hour, they just did not come to an agreement and not everyone able had a chance to talk? What happens when they don't finish?
I mean, PPTs run over all the time. Certain things have to happen in that time frame, and districts hopefully plan ahead when you know you have a lot of people around the table or it's that first determination PPT. It's going to take time for everybody to go through their evaluations. And so, you know, in our district, we would carve out a good 2 hours for that meeting to make sure that a decision took place. Depending upon what the goal was for that PPT, like if it's an eligibility determination, you can't leave that meeting without a determination. And so folks are going to be glued to their seats until the determination is made.
I've been in PPTs as myself and helping other families where they wrap it up. Okay, our time's up. And we're like, no, not everything's done. So parents have a right to say, not everything's accomplished yet.
The parent should absolutely express concern for that in the meeting. I can't speak to all the legal pieces because there are so many different scenarios that could play out there. But they should absolutely speak up if that's occurring.
Okay, that's good information.
Awesome. Well, Vicki, again, we want to thank you so much for providing us with all of that valuable information. I think, you know, one of the goals that we have here is always to provide, you know, families, parents, and individuals information that, you know, very much impacting their lives. And I think some of the information we received today very much does that. And, you know, it's always good to get clarifications or even know when there are changes that are coming to a process, because sometimes I think people feel like these are done behind the curtains and then all of a sudden it's sprung on people. Yes, these things are very impactful. And yes, they're going to change how you receive or how you are informed about services. But, you know, again, having those conversations, documenting everything, and really constantly being that advocate is really important. So thank you again.
And Vicki, I again, thank you as well for your time. And you did say earlier, and I really want to, you know, say this again, it's the communication. And it goes both ways, communication from the school and communication from the parents. And I think if when there's that lack of communication is when things tend to fall apart. So if there's that open communication, I think everything can be successful.
And if I can just highlight, the parent is a member of the PPT team. It's not the team and the parent. Mm-hmm. And so the parent's input is just as valuable as any other professional at that table.
Thank you, Vicki.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
As always, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the Starting website. On any Amazon or Alexa-enabled devices, you can ask Alexa to play 99% Effective Sarah Solutions podcast. And let us know what you want to learn more about. If you have an idea or topic, let us know. We would love to hear from you.